It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This half hour, we recall Iowans who fought in the Second World War, more specifically those who were captured and held prisoner in Axis POW camps. My guest is historian Jerry Yoakum. Jerry is vice president of the Camp Algona POW Museum Committee. He was the lead writer in creating a collection of stories of Iowans who became POWs during the Second World War. It's called 13,000 Nights, Kossuth County, Iowa Men in Axis POW Camps in World War II. It's a project that also compares the treatment of American POWs in Germany with the treatment of German prisoners of war held here in Iowa. Jerry Yoakum, welcome to our program.
Thank you, Ben. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're a historian, a former high school history teacher, a resident of Algona there in North Iowa. And I think it's probably good to acquaint our listeners quickly with the museum there that's been around, what, something like 15 years. It honors the men and women who served in World War II from Kossuth County. 2,500 served in the European and Pacific theaters. 113 of them died. 29 were held by Axis powers. I'm taking that off the back of the jacket of your book here. Anything to add to that, Jerry, before we get to this book?
The museum is actually has a twofold purpose. One is to remember the men who were here as German prisoners. There were 10,000 German prisoners in the Camp Algona system, and they were in 34 different camps, branch camps in Iowa, Minnesota, North and South Dakota. And our purpose when we created the museum was to take care of remembering them, but also to remember the men and women who from Kossuth County that were a part of the war effort. We had some old vets when we got started, some old World War II vets that said, well, it's okay to start a museum with the German prisoners, but don't forget our boys, because they sure didn't get treated as well as the German prisoners did here. And that was certainly the case.
Okay. With that backdrop, tell us about this collection of stories. Amazing stories you have here. Tell us more about the collection as a whole. What did you aim to do here?
Well, the aim was to take a look at the men from Kossuth County who were in Axis camps. There were 29 of them from our county, and that's a fairly large number. Montgomery County has more, and that would be Red Oak was the capital seat of their county, and a lot of those got caught in the Farside Gap in Tunisia and Algeria. And so we did have quite a few from our county that were in prison camps, both in the Pacific and the European theater, five in the Pacific and the rest of them in the European theater. Then in addition, we had five men that were from Iowa that were in prison camp in Germany. And when they were let out then in May of 45, they still needed time in order to get their golden parachute, or their ruptured duck, as it was called, their discharge. And so the wisdom of the government was to send them to Camp Algona and guard German prisoners. And that doesn't sound real logical, but that's what it was. And so we've also have the stories of these five men from Iowa. So most of them then are from Kossuth County.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's get to the stories, because that's really the fascinating part here. And for you as a historian, I'm sure the fascinating part. Let's talk about, I guess one of the focuses you like to talk about is the Kossuth County men of the 34th Division. Can you tell us their story?
Yes, we have the 34th Division had six men. There were some men that were of the men that were in the Army Air Corps, 14 of the Kossuth County men, and then seven men were in the military after D-Day, and they were in the European area. And then we had five that were in the Japanese or in the Far East. So let's start with the 34th Division. They are all pretty uniform in their training, because actually the preparation for World War II began before the war ever started with the maneuvers that took place in Louisiana. And a lot of the men actually were in the military and were already training in Northern Ireland when the war actually started. And so most of these men were part of Operation Torch, which was the invasion of northern Africa that would be the stronghold of the forces. And many of the men saw action in Tunisia, then in Algeria. And the Khazarine Pass is one of the areas of Algeria that became very sad for the Allies, because many of them got caught in a particular situation that they weren't prepared for, and many of them then were taken prisoner by the Axis forces, by both the Italians and the Germans. And so one of the men that I'd like to highlight in that would be, his name is Don Chiquet, and he spent over 800 nights in prison camp. Don was actually in a medical unit of the 168th Regiment, and he was also a part of Operation Torch in the landing of northern Africa. And they were located in the area of the Khazarine Pass, and as a medical man, they had no weapons. And so they were waiting to have casualties brought to them, and all of a sudden the Axis forces showed up, the Germans and Italians showed up, and captured them literally without a fight because they had no weapons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
His story then is pretty typical of the men of this division, taken through Italy and Sicily for a period of time, and then eventually taken into Germany. He was taken to Moosburg, which was a pretty notorious camp near Munich, and there were about 6,000 American prisoners there. Some then were a part of the 34th Division. Some of those other fellows were sent to other camps in Germany. This was a very brutal camp.
Go into that. When you say notorious or brutal, what do you mean by that, this camp? How was the treatment?
Okay, just to give you a little bit of it, it had not only some French and British and Americans, but it also had Russian prisoners. Very few of the Russian prisoners survived their imprisonment in Moosburg. They were simply brutal. They were left without much to eat at all, as well as being tortured. Don himself was tortured by the people in the camp. They were not given really much of a diet, probably less than a thousand calories a day. There also would have been these Red Cross packages that were sent by the International Red Cross to the camp, which were supposed to be distributed among the prisoners. Most of the time, they were not.
Mm-hmm.
They were kept by the the Axis forces that held them.
When you say tortured, Don Chiquet and the others, tortured to what purpose? Were they trying to extract information?
In some cases, they were trying to get information from them, and in other cases, it was just brutality that suited their needs. I don't know what any of the men from the 34th Division could have had that was valuable information, but that was one of their purposes, was to treat them in a way that was not very very humane. Surprisingly enough, all of the men, there were six, all of them did survive the imprisonment at Moosburg. Don had some long-lasting effects. He was a language arts teacher in the Algona system. I had the privilege of being one of his colleagues there, and he suffered greatly from his mistreatment the rest of his life, and was really it was unfortunate that he was not given better treatment, not only in the camp but later on. He wrote a lot of information down when he got home, put it in a drawer, and that was kind of his way of dealing with his experiences. Unfortunately, we don't have that. It got lost in when he passed away, and then later his wife, in the process of cleaning out the house, all of those papers were lost. So we did get some information from some of his former students and colleagues who he had talked briefly to about his experiences. And so that's really the first one that I wanted to highlight as a member of the 34th Division.
Jerry, let me remind our listeners that what your project is here. We have just over 10 minutes left. The time is slipping away far too quickly. I know you've got so many interesting stories to tell. Jerry Yocum, historian, a vice president of the Camp Algona POW Museum Committee, and the lead writer in this collection of stories of Iowans who became POWs during the Second World War, 13,000 Nights, Kossuth County, Iowa Men in Axis POW Camps in World War II. Tell us how you arrived at that title, 13,000 Nights.
That was really the number of nights that these men were kept in prison. You could round it off, and it was actually a little more than that. But the nights were always the worst. The days were occupied with whatever tasks that they had. But the nights were times when they could think about their families and the possibility that they might not be able to come out, get home, and see them. I want to give also some credit to members of our board. Don Hansen and Richard Sheik and Stephen Ross King helped also with the writing of this book, and that was really important for the research that they did. It took us about 4 years to track down the information, because a lot of these men came home, didn't talk about their experiences, and we had to dig pretty deep, but fortunately we had some good cooperation from the families.
Right. Did you interview, were any of these men still alive? Could you interview them? Are they still alive?
None are alive now. We did interview three of them who live here or lived in Algona, and we were able to get their first-person stories, and that was very valuable.
That must have been powerful for you as a historian. We talked there about, you gave an example from the European theater, and you talked about the brutality of that one prison camp there. In my reading of his World War II, the European, the German prisoner of war camps are not nearly as bad as the Japanese prison camps for Allied soldiers. Do you have an example from that theater, the Pacific theater?
Well, we do, and 1% of the Americans that were held by the Germans died. Some of the ones that were in the Air Force camps in northern part of Germany didn't quite have as brutal treatment as we talked about with Don at Moosburg. But in the case of the Far East, Japan did not sign the Geneva Convention. And so basically what they were looking for is these healthy young men, when they were captured, healthy young men to help them out with their industries on the Japanese mainland. And so that's where a number of them were sent once they got captured. But it was, yeah, it was certainly a very trying time, because there were a lot of torture, a lot of these men that were captured, for an example, in the Philippines after the Bataan Death March. That was bad enough. But many of these men had been put on quarter rations during the time that the holdout at Bataan and also at Corregidor was taking place. So they were pretty well drained by the time they were captured, and the march itself, 2 to 3 days, took a lot out of them. So by the time they got into the camps, they were certainly in very, very bad shape.
Right, right. I just by coincidence, I just finished up reading, not remembering the author, but Ghost Soldiers, that recounts a fantastic rescue of imprisoned Allied soldiers on the Bataan Peninsula. You mentioned there Bataan, of course, such a horrendous, a fearful place for many of our soldiers during the Second World War. Where else would you like to take us there? We have less than 10 minutes here. What is another way to show a little bit of the spectrum of the experiences that these men from Kossuth County experienced while in POW camps?
Of the five men that were in the Pacific Theater, two of them died very early on. Captain Burton Thompson, who was a graduate of Iowa State University, actually was a center on their basketball team for 3 years. He was a trained veterinarian, and he was executed after 8 days. Now, the charge against him was that he was anti-Japanese. Well, you're at war with that country, and certainly you're going to be a little anti-Japanese, but he was also turned in by an American turncoat who later on was court-martialed at that. And then Donald Thompson, spelled with a P, was injured at the Battle of Corregidor, and was taken to the camp at Cabanatuan, and he died on July 4th of 1942. So he lasted about 6 months in that imprisonment there. The other three men, Dale Ehring and Gene Clapsaddle, and get the other one.
Russell Larkin.
Russell, thank you. Russell Larkin, all survived, and they spent about 12,000, about 1,200 nights in captivity. And maybe the one that I'd like to posthole a little bit would be Russell Larkin. His story is a fascinating one, not only of how he suffered, but also how he was able to kind of redeem this situation and be able to literally survive and make the most of his life. He was at Cabanatuan, and he volunteered to go into the Zero Ward, and that was the area where prisoners who were ready to die were taken simply to prepare them to die, a 0% chance that they would survive. And he volunteered to go in there and be able to take care of those men. He later then, back in the barracks, volunteered to give shaves. He had a piece of metal that he had in his shoe that he could use to shave the men, and he would get a few extra rations for that. And then later on, he was taken by what is called a hell ship out of the peninsula or out of the area of the Philippines and taken to Japan. Now, they're referred to as hell ships because they were simply large cargo ships that had no markings that would indicate that there were POWs on board. And so they were basically fair game for the Allied Air Force. And so some of these, there were examples where men were killed simply because our own allies bombed them. In the case of his ship, there were some that actually died on board, some cannibalism that men resorted to. He was taken to one of the smaller islands off the coast of Japan and was put in a group of men that had about 120 in the prison group. And he actually worked, it was in a blast furnace, and of the 120 men that were there, 10 died by the end of the war. Kind of interesting that by the end of the war, these men saw a lot of American planes flying over. Now, they were Air Force men, so they recognized, you know, what a P-51 was, or they recognized what a B-17 or B-24 were. But there was this new plane called the B-29 that was flying over. And about a little later on then in August, an area that was about 100 miles away from his, a city called Hiroshima, was bombed by one of these planes, the Enola Gay.
Right.
And they were able to see the huge fireball from their camp. Had no idea, of course, what it was. Eventually, the guards left, and the men were taken by train to an area in northern Japan, where they were sent home. His was pretty typical of the example that they just didn't talk about it at home. He had three children, a boy and two girls, and as they were growing up, they just knew their dad was had maybe kind of been in a prison camp and didn't hear many stories. One of the son-in-laws, however, he confided in him and told him a lot of information about his imprisonment. And fortunately, that's where we got a lot of material for the Dale Earing story.
Jerry, we have just a couple minutes left. I wanted to ask you a quick couple questions. So many fascinating stories, but let me go to this compare. Since you are a vice president on that committee of the Camp Algona POW Museum, these are POWs from Germany that were in Algona and throughout the Midwest. Quickly, in the couple minutes we have, Iowa housed some 10,000 German POWs, I understand. How does the treatment of American POWs in access camps compare with the Germans kept here in North America, in the Iowa area?
Well, there's no comparison. They were treated very correctly and by the Geneva Convention, not only at this camp, but in the 150 camps across the country. They were taken out to work. They were paid for what they worked. Their weight was checked periodically to make sure they maintained their body weight. The International Red Cross came in, and we have records that showed where they would weigh the men and make sure that they were maintaining their body weight. And so just no comparison. And the men from Germany realized that they were being treated well.
Indeed. And I have a little story here. When I moved, I spent over a decade living in Germany. When I moved there in the early 90s, you may be interested in this little story. I met a former German soldier, a former member of the Wehrmacht, in a grocery store in Germany. I was looking through the produce. I know he was stocking produce, this older man. He heard my American-accented German. A smile popped onto his face, and he recalled his time as a German POW held, I think, in Texas. He a broad smile, very happy time. He said he was so well treated, and he was just so thankful to be out of the European theater of war. And you could see on his face, I'm even recalling in my memory a tear in his eye, how happy the time was. So it really is something that so many German POWs experienced here, the correct treatment.
That is a great example of what the treatment was like all over the country. And, certainly there were some that were not did not feel quite as happy about it. But most of them were about 3,000 of the 400,000 German prisoners. About 3,000 came back to live in the U.S., and many more, if they had been able to emigrate, would have done so as well. But
Jerry,
yes, all the contact we've had echoes your story.
Right. Jerry, so many stories we didn't get to in this book, 13,000 Nights, Kossuth County, Iowa Men in Axis POW Camps in World War II. Such a great effort by you and others there in Algona. 4 years, I understand, of research and writing this book. Jerry, it's been a pleasure having you on. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Ben, and they can go to our website, pwcampalgona.org, and learn how they can purchase that.
Very good. pwcamp.algona.org.
Thank you.
Thank you. Coming up after a short break, I'll talk with naturalist and author Doug Peacock. Now, after returning from military service in Vietnam, he credits grizzly bears with restoring his soul. He'll be a keynote speaker at an upcoming event here in Iowa. We'll talk about it with him, Doug Peacock. After this short break, I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.